We're reading in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. We've been going through this book. It's a book that God had wrote through the hand of Solomon. God's heart revealed through the hand and life of Solomon. Now, it's an interesting book because it's not God's wisdom entirely. Now, I know that's going to sound blasphemous almost and weird, but it's Solomon, this vessel, Solomon, expressing his life with God. And some of his life with God was obviously not in obedience to God. It was actually doing what he wanted to do. And so then he charted, if you would, laid out his observations, things that he'd noticed in this world that he was living in. Now, the principle to see, the embedded truth within this whole book is what Solomon repeats for us time and again. Under the sun, looking at it from an under the sun perspective, not with an eternal view, but with just an under the sun perspective, only this life. If this all there is, then what is the point? Where we're at now, we're going to look at it from a point of, I think it's a really important principle to see in our lives, from a point of reasoning. You know what I mean? What you say to your kids, why did you do that? Why would you say that to a child? You say that to a child, regardless of their age, teen or younger. You would say that to them because there's something on your part as a parent that assumes that they were actually thinking, right? Which is might be the first problem. But assuming you're like you've engaged with them, you've talked to them, you've seen their expression, their response, their discipline. You know they have the potential, the possibility to reason, to think through. Well, this is why I did that. Well, Solomon, as a child of God, was given instruction. He was told how to do things, but he didn't really reason through from the right perspective. Natural reasoning. Natural reasoning is this thinking on the natural, the temporal, the under the sun. The result for natural reasoning is always despair, hopelessness, chasing after the wind. You arrive at a point, maybe you've progressed occupationally, maybe you've got there relationally, and everything's going well, and then you realize it just doesn't satisfy your soul. There's still a void in there that you're pursuing something, and you thought that would satisfy, and your reasoning for doing that was because this would make you content, happy, at ease, and then you get there, and it's like this vanishing point. It just disappeared on you. And now you don't have what you're hoping for because your reasoning point was not actually balance. Think of it this way, because this is something that's interesting. We see it from the Bible, and we see it in our own lives. These two things, natural reasoning and supernatural revelation. So it's our processing, looking around, seeing what life's all about, noticing things. But there's also this implanting, this providing by God of a greater wisdom than just natural reasoning. This supernatural revelation. God reveals to mankind divine wisdom. He gives us something to kind of hold on to. This temporal existence with an eternal insight to where then we go, oh. And then we start kind of looking a little, you know, and seeing a little more. Kind of like maybe seeing it in color or perhaps maybe just seeing with a broader range, more of a peripheral. This new perspective that we should hold on to, this different point of reasoning is really important. Because if I hold on to natural reasoning, I will surmise, I will conclude, and so will you, the same thing Solomon said. It's better to not even be born. I mean, that's what he concluded. If looking around and seeing the heartache and seeing the tragedy and seeing the misery and seeing the disappointment when he got a certain amount of cash or a certain amount of women or whatever, he just concluded, why'd I even start life? It was just not the best way to live. I mean, there's no point to it. Well, when you have natural reasoning that's invaded by supernatural revelation, it gives us a new point. It gives room for hope, correct? I look at my life before God invaded my space, so to speak. I had things all figured out. I reasoned things according to my own ideas. But when he invades that space and starts touching my heart about forgiveness and about the depth of my soul and the darkness as a person, even though other people may pat you on the back, you know something's stirring in here. And so as he reveals that and then starts giving you a new point, and for me, I look at the point of conversion when I say, God, I don't even know how to follow you. I don't even know what it means to be born again. I don't even know how to accept Jesus. But I do know I don't like my life. I do know the way I'm going is counterproductive. It's destructive. And so, God, I need to go the right direction. That wasn't natural reasoning. That's divine. That's supernatural revelation. He reveals to you your need. But as I said, supernatural revelation gives room for hope, for purpose, for strength, for joy, for peace, for patience, for kindness. It gives room for it, but it's not required. Is it possible that you could choose, that you could form your opinion even after receiving revelation? The truths of God are revealed to you. Do you have to receive them? See, you still have the choice. There's still room for that to grow inside your soul, but it's not required. See, some people hear the gospel. Some people observe changed lives. Some people have an encounter with God, and they choose to continue on this plane of natural reasoning. Solomon chose to operate apart from the revelation of God, which is a fascinating thing if you know much about the guy. What do we know about the guy? That God appointed him. His father David was also appointed. God in his wisdom selected Solomon to be king over Israel. And then he gave Solomon a special dose of smarts. Extra wisdom. He implanted it or give it to him. But then now Solomon's got to choose to use it. He's got to take his natural faculties and abilities and capacities and intellect. And he's got to allow that to be invaded by this supernatural revelation. And he did to some degree on a natural plane. He was able to speak words of wisdom that the people were fascinated by. Leaders from countries all around, princes and all these different dignitaries would come to hear the wisdom of Solomon. But Solomon, unfortunately, actually got to thinking about himself more than what God was saying. So here we have in Ecclesiastes 7. God has revealed things, but Solomon has operated apart from those things. Solomon says, everything's vanity. Under the sun, it's just whatever. Let's look through this. I'm going to go through this in a proverb format, so to speak, meaning I'm just going to look at these proverbs, which is what chapter 7 is just loaded down, if you would, with these little principles and observations and thoughts and considerations from a man who is not necessarily surrendered to God, obviously, but he's just observing life. And he says in verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. All right, let's take the first part. A good name is better than precious ointment. It's better to do good than smell good, okay? Basically what is being stated. It's one thing to present yourself as something, but if it's just a cover-up, it's better to have a good name. A good name is much more important than what we can pretend. And as one person had said, take care of your soul, take care of your spirit, be aware of your actions, and your reputation will take care of itself. So pretty straightforward. He's okay, so this is better. The day of death than the day of one's birth. Let's follow that flow. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Mirth meaning happiness, joy, pursuing these other things. Think of these four verses. It's a view from above the party, looking back. You know what I mean by the party? Because don't you think this is contrary to like American thinking? Living for the weekend, all about happiness. Now, this is great. And he's looking at this party life, this sense of pleasure-oriented, a sensual-driven existence. And he's saying, you know what? That's not really when I sort things out. That's not when I really think about things. You think about priorities more after a funeral than you do after a barbecue. Is that true? That's just basically what he's conveying. He's not saying, you know, I'm just going to find the most amount of sad people and just hang out with them. But you just know yourself. when you drive home from that funeral, or you attend, or you contemplate later the people that were dealing with the tragedy and a difficulty, you're thinking different. You're thinking more in reality of all living people, because everybody deals with it. So he's saying, you know what, these are good times in the sense of it causes us to think through and reshuffle our priorities. Now, in verse 5, it says, it's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This is vanity. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. So who are you listening to? Picking up there in verse 5. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise. And it speaks of, you know, somebody who gives good input. They may chide you. They may rebuke you. You know it's good advice, but you just don't like it. And he's saying it's better to receive that, you know, have your feelings hurt by somebody who knows what they're talking about, than taking bad advice from fools who will actually do more damage. And what does it do? According to this text, it says, you know, it's better to get corrected by somebody you don't necessarily like, but you know it's true, than to listen to the song of fools. What's the song of fools we know to be? They give you advice. Well, if, you know what, if I do, I do this, and I do that, and then I punch them. And you're like, you know what, he deserves it, because he's the kind of person that responds to violence. And I'm like, yeah. So, boom, you punch him. And then you go to jail. And then they say, what an idiot. Do you know he actually punched that guy? I mean, I was just kidding. I wouldn't have hit him. That moron went and decked some dude. And it's this, they laugh at you. They mock at you because you did what? You followed their advice, actually. And they think you're an idiot. And guess what? You're proving them right. So it says, like, for the crackling of thorns under a pot. And what does that mean? Well, let's see. Ever burn pine needles on a campfire? What do? They just like flare up. They're really cool, except for the smoke. But I mean, they really flare up and they crackle a lot, but they just dissipate. They go away. Now in that day, you know, they didn't have propane or butane or anything else. So what do they use? Let me gross you out. Actually, they used dried manure a lot of times. But when they didn't have that, a lot of times they would collect twigs and stuff like that that would actually crackle and flare up, but then it would just go away. So is the laughter of the fool. It's there, but it's like chasing after the wind. Surely oppression destroys a heart. Oppression, injury, it speaks of extortion, unjust gain. The man who's smart, when his heart is hurt, can do dumb things, correct? That's just a real simple, straightforward soaking of life and saying, you know what, that guy was really smart until that person did that to him. And then out of vengeance, and then out of this reason, I don't know what he was doing, but look how foolish he was. And he goes on to say, and a bribe debases the heart. A gift. Do you think a gift can get you off track with people? It can. Say you're just kind of struggling to make ends meet, and you're just kind of getting by, and you know you need to get that extra job and just work a couple extra hours a week, and you got to tighten your belt and not spend so much money. And you go to grandma, and you're just chatting with her, and you start kind of talking. You're just talking. And she just writes you a check for like $1,000. You're like, whoa, grandma's awesome. I love grandma. This is so cool. I want to hang out with her more. Because it tilts the heart. And the person could easily be going, you know what? The next difficulty, the next hardship, the next tough time. The heart is debased. It's off base. Because it then says, you know, honey, I was thinking about it. You know, I know things are tight and everything, but I just think it would be a good idea just to visit grandma for a couple weeks. Why would you do that? Because this gift, this bribery, if you would. So you see what Solomon, what I think is really cool about Solomon in this state is something that we should all do. He separated himself from the common thought, and he started looking things a little more honestly. He got outside of the ebb and flow of conversation and logic and Facebook opinions, and he just backed up and said, really? This is kind of what happens. This is what's kind of taking place. Moving on, let's take a look there in verse 8, where he says, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. So the end is better than the beginning. So, he, you know, some things, that's true, correct? I think about, you know, just, well, you can just think about various different activities you do, a lot of things in life. You know, you kind of get better as you go along. So he's saying, well, you know, the end is better than the beginning. You know, the patient is, it's better to be patient than to be proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of a fool. Psalm 4, verse 4 tells us to be angry and sin not, or do not sin. So anger is not a problem, according to God. It's what you do with it. See, to have anger, I think, is a very necessary God-given emotion. It stirs us. It gets us off our backside and gets us doing things that maybe we wouldn't have done. But we got to make sure we're not doing something out of vengeance, out of mal or ill will, where we're just like wanting to hurt someone. He says, you know, in this thing, do not hasten your spirit to be angry, but rather recognize anger rests in the bosom of a fool. And that's what I look at. I don't want it resting in me. I don't want to give it a place in my heart as a backup bedroom and a spare place to stay to where then it can just kind of start to smolder. So, you know, basically it says in Psalm 4, you know, meditate on these things. Don't go to bed mad. Work it out. And then you obviously can't just call somebody and work some things out, but you can before the Lord surrender and submit and let him teach you how to deal with the anger. Because Solomon knew anger, if not properly controlled, is very destructive. Verse 10, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. So stop saying the good old days, okay? That's what he's saying right there. Oh, remember the good old days? You don't. See, you're selective. Back when I was a kid, and so it just depends on the conversation. Well, back when I was a kid, we had to walk in the snow uphill 4 miles both ways barefoot. Because you're expressing, I want to make it look like I had a harder life. Or back when I was a kid, man, people worked hard and they were honest and devoted. I don't know where you grew up. Some did, but the whole point is, it's not wise to say that because it's not an accurate assessment. Each season has its benefits. Each season has its challenges. So he says, you're not inquiring wisely when you're saying it this way. Wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. So wisdom, say you inherit something, say you have an estate, say you have something you are a steward over and you need to manage it. It's nice to have wisdom. It's a no-brainer. If you don't have anything and you just got to, you know, like take space in your cardboard box under the bridge, you know, it's just a little easier to manage that. But when you have to deal with other things and you want to make sure that it's going to be handed along, and you know, you see what he's saying. Wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. It can be used for a purpose, but it can also be used outside of its intended purpose. Moving on, consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the days of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. So once again, as he's thinking through life and looking at these proverbs and thoughts, he makes a statement, you know, God provides good. He, in the day of adversity, a day when things are disagreeable, God's there. In the day of prosperity, God's there. So instead of, you know, kind of like, well, God, why did you leave me? Because isn't that what we see in our world today? Well, if there's a God around, then why do people die? Why is there pain? Why is there murder? Why is there all these bad things happening to people? But he says, you know, honestly, it's just good and bad happening all the time. Because basically the world is living outside of God's intended design. We as a people, humanity, have actually chosen to live our own ways. And so because of that, it's affected this whole world and what's happening around us. Moving on, because I want to rock through this whole thing. Verse 15, I have seen everything in my days of vanity. That's our premise. It helps us to see. Where's he reasoning from? Vanity, under the sun, chasing after the winds. I've seen all kinds of things. Things, you know, that just don't make sense. There's a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. It ought not be, he would be thinking. If it's not, have you ever thought this in the world you live in? It's not fair. Well, guess what? That's not nothing personal, but that's no breakthrough. You're not going to see it on the news. It's nothing new under the sun, because even Solomon said generations ago, man, you know, this guy's living right and dies early, and this guy's twisted and immoral and wicked, and he's living longer. It's just not right. Right. It's true. But you don't say, well, God, I've had enough of you because people are messed up. You just say, God, I need more of you because I'm around a lot of messed up people. I need to know how to live. Do not be overly righteous, nor be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? You know, don't be pompous. Don't be thinking you're something, because all that you are is what God has given to you. No, every good and perfect gift comes from above. So even when you're doing well, be aware of why you're doing well. Say, okay, God, my family's doing good. My job's doing good. Things are going okay because you're good. And don't be going like, well, you know what? We need to do more of this and we need to have that. And you get the point. Moving on. Verse 12, do not be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? Wow. Does that mean you can do something that would take you off of God's allotted time? Sure seems like it. In Corinth, the church in Corinth, it says that some of those guys had passed away because they had taken things lightly. And they were kind of even being flippant about the Lord's Supper. And there's some things that were happening in their church. Some guys died early. Don't say, I have enough faith. I have faith to move a mountain. I have faith to stop a semi. And then go stand in the freeway and believe you have faith to stop it. Because guess what? My suggestion is, you're checking out early. And they're going to like scrape you off the grill. Because don't be stupid. Don't do things that are like, this is not smart. Pretty basic, because you could die before your time. It's good that you grasp this. And he's saying this, hold on to it. And also, don't remove your hand from the other, for he who fears God will escape them all. So he's seeing and he's laying out some of these adversities and negative vibes. And he's saying, you know what, God knows what's going on. Don't let go of this. See, I think it's important that we embrace this. I think the church has chosen to be ignorant about some of these realities. And because we haven't thought through and we haven't worked through what God has to say about the things we're learning, then we somehow think God doesn't know. And therefore, he can't really help me because he obviously hasn't been helping anyway. And in people, believers, Christians who should know this, find themselves going, it's a little confusing. I can't explain it. Grasp it. Hold on to it. Wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city. Verse 20. For there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. You read that, you know, God is pretty much the same God. The Old Testament and New Testament. People have a hard time reconciling that. But you know what he said in the New Testament? All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Well, actually, that was the Old Testament as well. And what do we see here? How many are good? None. We know Jesus Christ is the only one who did not sin. So he says even then, you know, here's the simplicity. There's not a just man on earth who does not sin. All are in need of a Savior. Verse 21, and also do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. Don't take it too serious, because quite honestly, you've probably said worse, okay? And that's just the real simple, straightforward reality. We get, oh, I can't believe that person did it. Like, well, stop and listen to yourself a little bit. Hit rewind back a few years. You were the one voicing that. You were the one saying that. So how can you make a big deal about it? I could go off on that one, but verse 23. All this have I have proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. As for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? I applied my heart to know, to search and seek out wisdom and the reason of things, to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but by the sinner shall be trapped. But the sinner shall be trapped by her. These observations from his own emptiness, this wisdom of the world, his reasoning is deficient, it's incomplete, but yet there's smatterings, there's splinters, there's pieces of truth in through this. And he says in Proverbs chapter 5, 6, 7, to watch out for women. It's not a gender thing. He's just saying, you know, guys, you think you got it figured out, but there's some women who, they're looking at things different than you are. And obviously the women already know it's the same thing. It's not a gender thing. You know, guys are the same way. It's like their ideas are like a little tweaked. Let's consider what he says later. I'll just read it to you in Proverbs 3. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, beginning there in verse 5, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. So you see what he's saying is he's looking through and he's like, I've seen things in life and I've been studying these things and I realize, you know, there is just sometimes that people are laying, specifically he would say women who are laying snares and traps and trying to trip him up. I think he's a sucker anyway, in one sense. He's got 700 wives and 300 concubines. I don't think that was enough. I think he probably just had that wandering eye mentality. And so he's realizing, what am I doing here? What am I accomplishing? I keep going through the same process and in the same pattern, and I think she'll be different, but she's not. And what am I thinking? Goes on to say, here's what I've found, says the preacher. The preacher meaning the heralder, the proclaimer. It actually, it's one who has called an assembly. It means the assembler. And he said, this is what I've discovered. Adding one thing to the other to find out my reason, which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. Truly this only I have found, that God made man upright, but they sought out many schemes. This only I have found. You know, I've found like maybe one guy in a thousand who is willing to look at reality. And he hasn't come across one woman yet. And it's obviously not a gender thing. I think just once again, you got to look at this guy's perspective on life. But he did come to a very powerful conclusion. It's something that I want to make sure we finish with. God made man upright. That's what he says. He doesn't say, well, the world's unfair. It's not my fault. It shouldn't have been this way. I've looked around. I've sorted it out. I've seen other people. I've seen a couple thousand men and women and more. And I've been kind of like working through this in my brain. And here's what I realize. God made man upright. Upright means correct, level, proper. God made man not lacking. It wasn't anything left out. It's not like God assembled man and sent him into the world and said, oh, I forgot to put in that. See, we have everything. God, he says he's upright. But what's the problem? Look at the verse. But they have sought out many schemes. Man has been made upright, and he has a reasoning capacity, the ability, the faculties to think, to choose. And in that, he's chose rebellion. That's another good example. But Solomon himself is an example of it. Solomon himself is one who was told, as we've seen several times in the last few weeks, he was told, listen, don't be having multiple wives, don't be getting a lot of money for yourself, and don't be developing this strength in the horses thinking that that's going to save you. Don't be going to Egypt and get horses. You read Deuteronomy 17, it was laid out. God said hundreds of years before, listen, here's the deal. When you come into the land, they're like, oh, what land? They didn't even fully know what he's talking about. He says, when you come into the land, you're going to want a king. And when you then give in to this king thing, you're going to do this too. And they're going to want to have power. They're going to want to have multiple women. They're going to want to have horses. And then he says, don't do it. Solomon knew that. But Solomon, in his wisdom, decided his way would work. Man is always scheming against God's design. You are, I am. It's just our nature. Even as a born-again Christian, the Spirit of God, God himself indwelling you and me, we still are thinking outside the design. I'm going to close up with this picture. It's an analogy that I think just makes it very clear. Solomon, we see, live in this. It's the picture of a builder. Say somebody builds a vehicle. That builder knows more about the vehicle than anybody else, correct? But you are asked to operate the vehicle. So you're like, okay, I'll operate it. Yeah. This is what I've noticed about operators. Some of them are not that safe. You ever seen somebody, like, okay, here's, I'll just throw out a few real quick because I don't have a lot of time. So hang around carpenters a lot. Eventually, you're going to meet this guy, okay? Because he's really good at operating this table saw. And he knows how to do it. He's been doing it all his life. And matter of fact, he was hassled by that pathetic, inefficient safety guard. This is ridiculous. I can't get anything done with that stupid thing in the way. I don't know what they were thinking when they built this. So you remove it, and it works better. You're quicker. You can get more done. And it'll cut flesh really well. Because you know more than the builder. What about a vehicle, a car? Because you guys have a car, right? How many of you peeled off the safety stickers? I don't look at me bad. I've done that before because I'm just tired of looking at that stupid yellow and black thing. I don't do it anymore because, you know, bad idea when you have kids driving. Bad idea anytime. But think about a vehicle. You know, I've had several four-wheel drive vehicles. And there's something, I think it's a mixture of testosterone, a gender issue with the guy, and inclines and hills and places that you could maybe get to. And so, you know, you're told, listen, it's a four-wheel drive. Okay, yeah, it'll get you, but it won't take you to the moon, okay? It'll only do so much. But if the manufacturer says, don't use this vehicle in this way, and you say, what does he know? Seriously. He's more concerned about a lawsuit than anything else. That's why they put them stickers on there. I mean, what you got to do is, first of all, you got to take the vehicle and you got to modify it. You got to make it stronger and faster and with more power. And then you just got to go. Well, you shouldn't do that in a four-wheel drive. Oh, don't tell me how to drive a four-wheel drive. I was born in the back of a Jeep. I know everything about four-wheel drives. Okay, fine, whatever. And then the guy goes and rolls the Jeep and destroys the vehicle. And then he complains to the owner, this thing was made unsafe. It's unstable on turns. Seriously, think about it. Think of the picture of that analogy, because I think it just resonates so clearly. God says, listen, I'll give you a vehicle. This is the design. This is how this vehicle works. Okay, this vehicle is designed to worship me and to glorify me. It's not made to worship you. It's not made to glorify you. This body, this vehicle, is made for a purpose. Yeah, God, I understand that, but you don't understand. We live in a new era, a modern time. We have technology. I can live this way, and I can carry on in this way, because it's not like that old-fashioned stuff. It's a different time now, God. We would never say that, but it's exactly what we say. I know better how to do and operate this body than the manufacturer does. And so then what happens? We start losing fingers. We start rolling on top of each other. We start going, why'd this happen? Maybe the manual could say a few things, show a few things. And maybe, I know how to start it. I know how to get it going. Yes, but do you know how it was designed? An operator will never know fully how something is built, ever. Because you weren't there in the design. You didn't see the big picture. You can study all about airplanes, and you still won't know the intricacies in the depth of the designer. And it's the same thing in these bodies. So therefore, if the designer says, tell you what, you can know me. I will chill with you. I will hang with you. I will teach you. I will correct you. I will show you things you never even imagined. But you got to be willing to listen to me. Because, you know, if you think you got it going on, I have a problem with that. So I will give unmerited favor, undeserved kindness. I will pour upon this one who's humble enough to receive it. But to the proud, what does he say? God gives grace to the humble, but he resists the proud. He says, all right, you think you got it figured out? You think Solomon says is the way to do it? It won't work, Solomon. But let me know how that works out for you. He never abandoned him, never left him. But Solomon chose to continue to work through his own agenda. And he kept concluding, this is pointless. I wonder if God's saying, duh. Of course it is. I told you that. But Solomon wants to experience it. You and I want to experience it. And yet, at what point do we have to get old to get smart? Because I don't think you have to. I think Timothy was exhorted, listen, be an example to believers in the way you talk, in your word, in your conduct, in the way you are as a young Christian. Stay tight, in tune, and in touch with God, because it'll change your life. You don't have to get old and go, you know what? I remember now, I was told not to do that. You can just go right from the start. It's like, all right, God, how do I live my life? Let's pray. We're going to actually have the worship team come back up, and we will close. You never thought you'd get clear through a full chapter on a Sunday morning, did you? I hope you're not sitting there going, yeah, I hope we never do that again. I really was compelled to cover it this way because there's just so much in there, but there's a simple core reality that I think we can easily see. Solomon thought he had it all figured out. In his logic, I believe in the midst of it, he was fully convinced someone else was off course and not him. He really believed that he was doing it the right way, and yet he knew he wasn't. And it's much like many of us. We have little things that we say, it's okay, it's a little thing. Later, that'll become out. It'll come out and it'll be defined as operator error. Let's pray. Will you stand with me? God, as we would just stand before you, we just rejoice in you. I pray for anyone who doesn't have that initial phase, that's part of the relationship where they have surrendered to you, that you would teach them your truth, that they would be able to take hold of what you have for them, that your love would be known by them, that they not have to live through pain and heartache and separation from you, but rather, God, they would know your design and direction for their lives. For all of us, God, those who have known you for a long time, Lord, may we be sensitive to what you have to say. May we be not only receptive, but responsive. That we too would be changed people, maturing, growing, grasping what you laid out. And I pray, God, for each of us that we would be guarded from our own wisdom, from our own ideas, from anything that would be contrary to your direction for our lives. In the days of adversity and difficulty and tragedy, help us, Lord, to keep our eyes upon you. And even more dangerous days, the most destructive days, those days of prosperity and comfort, God, awaken us that we would stay close to you. To you be the glory, both now and forever, Jesus. Amen.